Hey everybody, welcome back to the Church of Harvest Parent Podcast. Pastor Royce, Family Ministries Pastor, and I am super excited because we have back with us today the one and only Miss Ariel Griffin, and we have one of my best friends on the whole planet, Pastor Dave Holland, who is the lead pastor of Restoration Church in Gardner, Kansas, and I got them both in the building today. Say what's up.
Let's go. What's up? And I got to meet Ariel a few weeks ago, so it's awesome to get to spend some time with her.
Oh, wait. Every time.
Yeah.
So every single time. It is amazing to get to spend time with either of you. So when I found out I could spend time with both of you, was like, bonus. And then we get to have people join into the conversation as well. And so super excited to do that. It's fall, y'all. Sweater weather is upon us. It decided it wanted to like tease the hot one last time.
Yeah.
And so it was like in fuego. And then here we are. And so real quick, do you guys have any like fall activities that are a must? Are we like breaking out pumpkins and pumpkin spicing everything? Or is it like Midwest corn maze? I don't know. It's weird stuff out here in the Midwest. I'm from the South, y'all. We don't go into corn mazes ever. Texas Chainsaw Massacre was a real thing.
Right. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
We don't play around in cornfields. But is there anything that you guys do typically around this time of year with your families? That's like staple?
That's a good question. I think we like to take walks. Like that's something that we did. Actually, we took a long walk today. Like when I say long, it was like 5 miles.
Yeah.
So it was a long
walk. Oh, no, I've been on a lot of those with you. So I know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I would say that's something that we do a lot, especially in the fall. And then as far as family, our kids pretty much at this point demand we do like a chili night. Like
okay.
We have the neighbors come over, and we live in a small subdivision, which Royce used to be a part of.
I did used to live there.
And then we exiled him forever.
Well, weird little known fact is that the exact day that Restoration had their very first meeting as a church at Dave and Natalie's house was the day I was moving into South Olathe from my house in Gardner for 6 years. It was the weirdest, like, God-ordained season of understanding, like, this relationship is going to change.
Yeah.
Like, this is your brother. This is your best friend. That will always remain the same. But, like, frequency is going to change.
Yeah.
Like, it was just it was really cool, but it was also kind of sad.
Yeah. Because it was the same
It was the exact same day. Yeah, I'm watching you guys put up the feathers in front of your house to have the very first Restoration Church meeting, and I'm literally packing a U-Haul with my high school students.
Wow.
Moving to South Olathe. We got the keys that day.
I didn't know that.
It was crazy. But anyway, so you doing chili, Ariel?
Yeah.
What are you guys doing?
Well, let's see. I would say for me personally, this is the time that I prepare to be the most fit that I ever am.
Oh, yeah.
I tend to be more fit in the winter. It's pretty crazy.
Oh, I have the exact opposite effect.
I know. That's like everyone else.
Yeah. Let's
but me, it was weird. I did all my training when I ran a marathon in the winter, so I just feel like that's the season where I'm like, it's how I fight against.
I'm gonna
like,
live vicariously. I'm gonna live vicariously through you. That's my anointing too.
That's good.
It's a word for the house. I'll take it. I'll receive it in Jesus' name.
And as a family, I mean, my heart wants to be all like cool. Like we did do like pumpkin stuff 1 year. It changes every year. It's never the same. And also because we have littles, like they don't fully remember it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, we get to test out the traditions we're going to build up. But we are a family where we call Halloween National Cosplay Day.
Hey.
Because we do like to wear costumes throughout the year.
Come
go. There's an active preparation. Last year we were, I was the mom from Daniel Tiger,
okay.
And then my husband was the dad. I was pregnant at the time. There's some episodes where she's pregnant.
Okay.
And then Memo, our 3-year-old, was Daniel Tiger.
That's
and it
amazing.
Was like, William did all his research. My husband, he did the backstory and everything. So we were very prepared.
You guys could do a sick Star Wars and like Baby Yoda thing coming through.
Yeah,
I do think October is so fun. You know, like October is like the month where you find out how spiritual people are. It's like, do you go knock on your neighbor's door and share the gospel or take candy or hopefully both? You know, it's like such a fun time for everyone to just kind of do whatever they do around that time. Well, not that it has anything to do with any of that stuff. I really just wanted to find out what your guys' lives look like in the fall, because I feel like I'm constantly living two seasons ahead. Like right now I'm planning like spring summer 24 because I've got like events and stuff like that I have to make sure I'm way ahead of. And so I have to like feel like I have to reel back into the moment. And one of the things that really grounds me is like my kids So Charlotte's 10, Chloe's 16, and they both have like really different school activities going on right now, like at sure. fifth grade versus junior year. Those are just two different worlds.
Yeah.
Like Chloe just got, it's like a very select group of kids. They have to meet all these different markers. I'm pretty sure she joined a cult at school. Like, I think that's what it is. It's like, it's Greek. And so,
like,
but it's
the Illuminati.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty much that. But Jenny was with her, so I think it's legit and we're okay. But like, she's got that going on with cheer stuff. And then Charlotte's like got color runs that we didn't sign up for. And Jenny's like, I don't want to do a 5K.
Yeah.
And so, like,
I'll run with her. I run with other people's kids all the time.
Well, yeah. Since I've got your fitness anointing now, I'm just going to run it too. I'm with you. But I do like to, like, always kind of, like, sober my mind with the season that's at hand, and kind of other people's lives and what they do helps me to kind of to ground in on that. But with, I know, like, school starting and activity starting to ratchet up maybe from the summer, one of the conversations that I know Dave and Restoration Church just kind of entered into, and I think one that's really important to families in general, is especially, I think, one of the things that happens as busyness becomes much more frequent mm-hmm. is that we kind of begin to slack on some of the day-to-day things that are really, really important and that impact our kids' emotional health, sure. especially as there's other variables that come into play as well, because it might not be what's going on at home. It might be a teacher at school or, a peer group situation. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I know Dave just had Mark Mayfield, Dr. Mark Mayfield, mm-hmm. he's part of Focus on the Family. He's out in Colorado. Come through and do a workshop for you guys at yeah. Restoration. Yeah. And if this video gets 1,000 likes and subscriptions, we have not planned. No, but we're actually, like, that's obviously, we want to always speak to the felt needs and always make sure that, like, anybody who's around us that is in a similar season of life, mm-hmm. parenting, following Jesus, what does this look like in this world that can seem so overwhelming, which is the emotional spectrum of life,
yeah.
that they really feel confident, mm-hmm. that they really feel equipped, and they really feel like they're in the driver's seat whenever it comes to the space mm-hmm. of their kids' emotional health. And so one of the reasons I loved just the opportunity to have both of you here is because you both have children, mm-hmm. but they're in wildly different seasons of life.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, like, Dave, I'm hoping. So how old is Gabby, Lily, and Cohen?
So I have three kids. Gabby's my oldest, and she's 13. They're all 2 years apart. Okay. So 13, 11, and 9. Yeah, and okay. Cohen's my youngest and my son.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that no one in your house is throwing a bowl of Cheerios across the room when you're trying to feed them, because that's not a thing at 9.
Yeah,
hopefully there's enough physical violence in your home that is – I'm playing, not physical violence. I just mean discipline. But, Ariel, that might be a thing, you know. William's at home right now with the boys, and we're praying for him. We're all
William, we're praying for you.
We love you, buddy. I love you so much, William. And thank you for letting your wife come to do this while you have both your children. But that might be a thing, you know? And so the emotional stewardship of two kiddos under the age of 4 versus, you know, kiddos 8 and up or whatever. So I think the opportunity for the conversation to have that broad range, right? Because we have effectively how old?
Yeah, 10-month-old and
10
three
months,
and
yeah,
a
okay,
half.
So that was I knew Mama was under 4, but but 10 months old, right, to 16 years old, that's kind of what we're dealing with here. And so as it pertains to emotional, like, stewarding the emotional health of your kids, what would you say in the season of life that you're in ladies first, what would you say, hey, these are some priorities that come to top of mind whenever it comes to the emotional stability of my kiddos?
Yeah. On my way here, I was really just processing, and I'm going to start off by just saying that someone recently said, why are these people who have kids who are like 1 over here trying to teach people about how to be parents? just heard it like a week or two ago, and I was like, I'm thinking about my calendar. I'm like, And, you know, on my way here, 1, don't let people look down on you because you're young.
So. Yes, amen.
that's the first thing the Lord said. But the second thing was that I think it's really important to, when it comes to emotional well-being, for parents to really, I think last time I talked about the importance of reparenting. Really, there's areas where we might be immature in our own emotional health. Mm-hmm. And so when a child starts acting a certain way, it triggers mm-hmm. us.
Yeah.
And me, as someone who's neurodivergent, I'm triggered just way faster than everybody else. Mm. The fight, flight, or freeze happens really quickly, right? And so I was just processing that it doesn't matter. I think there's this piece of, you know, being proactive.
Yep.
Avoid, not avoiding situations, but trying to ensure that you're not putting your child in situations where you know they're going to react or respond in a certain way. But I think another part is making sure I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? For sure.
And then I think the last piece is when they do react a certain way, realizing this is a child.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And I'm going to react like this is a child. Mm-hmm. I'm going to respond accordingly. And I would say, you know, I have, both of them are very different, but the three-year-old has very strong feelings.
Yeah.
and one of them I've noticed is that, you know, we all have a little bit of narcissism in us. And sometimes when he accidentally, like, hurts his little brother or someone else, he starts crying. Or, like, you know, he accidentally slaps me in the face. And he starts crying. And I was like, hold on. Like, there's some emotions that we're not actually about to acknowledge. I was like, you hit me and you're crying? You know, that's, these are the things that I say. And then, like, it's so interesting to see a three-year-old be like, oh, that's not the right response.
Yeah.
Because it's not coming out of empathy,
for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It's coming out of trying to take a situation that's impacting someone else and making it about them. And that starts really young. Right. So I think it's just really important. We have to walk this balance of acknowledging, like, where am I in my emotional health? Where's my child based on the, like, their life stage and what their emotional maturity should be?
Yeah.
You know, and then what is the best intervention?
Yeah. I love that you acknowledge, right, the emotional inventory and then the legitimacy, right? Like, there's certain spaces where we are not, we're not going to give this all the attention. We're not going to say that this is okay. And I love that, hey, you know, at 3 years old, especially while the subconscious is still real kind of malleable, that there's a pushback, you know, like one of the, and I won't rant on this very long because I'm pretty sure I've actually already mentioned this on this podcast in previous episodes, but there's a Disney Pixar movie called Inside Out. And that's my least favorite movie on the planet. And there's people that will disagree with me, and I totally understand it. It's just a premise point for me, which is that, you know, this movie depicts this human being, this person, this little, this young person who at the control panel of their lives is their emotions. And it sends the signal that your emotions control you, not you control your emotions. And so that principle is something that I don't categorically agree with. I don't agree with that at all. I understand the neurological science and data behind once your emotions do take over, but that's a relinquished control. And so there is a pushback, you know, it's okay to push back and parent your children and say, hey, that's not okay.
But that, what if that movie is actually saying that in our flesh, that is true, right? That the natural way is that our emotions do control us, which is why in the Bible, when God calls us to be slow to anger and all these things, it's like in our new creation state, we have the ability to.
If Disney and Pixar wants to explicitly preach the gospel, I'll let them, but I don't think they're going to anytime soon, so I'll just leave that right there and leave it up to interpretation because that's what art's beautiful for. But no, just the ability to say, like, hey, this is what's okay, this is what's not in this space. And that actually creates a. That creates a point of safety for kids, right? Because those boundaries, and this obviously, it plays far more than into just parenting. It plays into our relationship with the Lord. Because the Lord never limits something that's going to ultimately give us the most joy, right? He doesn't limit sex away from or outside of the bounds of marriage so that we can just be limited, right? He never just restricts just for the sake of restriction. It's always... there's abundant life in the appropriate space. And so this is not where abundant life is in this season of life. And we get to apply that like in our parenting, right? Where we say, hey, like right now, this isn't appropriate or this is appropriate. And during this space and time, like it kind of builds on that. So then Dave, with your situation and kind of where you're at, I'll ask a little bit more of a nuanced question because you guys just had the professionals in. So now you're all professional parents and you're all... Right. Yeah, you're all like, I think that's the vibe that can kind of happen, especially for church people, is that like, oh, the expert comes in and now we have different markers and boxes to check, which is obviously not the intent because no one's the professional on human emotion. Now, we can have great insights, right? And it's helpful to know these things. And so whenever we have people that are PhD'd in a particular area, like Dr. Dr. Mayfield is phenomenal. Like, I read his testimony. I've read some of his work. He works with some really amazing organizations. But what was so just as a dad, right, from that time, because that's how I know you, right? Yeah. Like, I know you as you're closer than my brothers to me, and you're a father. You're an amazing father, and you're very intentional. You and Natalie both are extremely intentional about being on the ground with your kids.
Yeah.
So what was impactful for you throughout that time that you guys got to spend with Dr. Mayfield?
Yeah, actually, a lot of what Ariel said, because I don't want to parrot what Dr. Mark shared with us. It was really helpful. It actually has a ton to do with what Ariel shared. First, the specificity in language. Most people cannot distinguish the difference between emotions and feelings.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the same thing.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Emotions are their reactions to external things that happen to us. Feelings is our interpretations of those emotions.
That's really good.
So there, he spent a lot of time like setting groundwork for making sure that you're just because you're saying the same word, you mean the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So really kind of stepping into the world to say, hey, what are you feeling? What are you experiencing? Where's that coming from? And then the other things that were really helpful in just hearing him share and talk was giving them. And I always assume, now this is maybe, I may be the only dummy in the room, but I just assumed if you were spiritually mature, that you're emotionally mature.
Oh, yeah.
That is a very wrong assumption.
Yeah.
And so I had spent a ton of time growing to be spiritually mature without understanding I was still very emotionally immature. And so it was actually a year and a half ago is when I met Dr. Mark, and it was my own, like, I'm trying to deal with these things and I don't know how to deal with them. So I was emotionally immature and unhealthy. And as I was dealing with other things, leadership, family, it was very chaotic, and it was hard to learn how to not, I started to cope instead of soothing. And again, there's a whole another conversation around those things. But the biggest takeaways for me was giving specificity to language, being really clear about what do you mean when you say, and not assuming anything, or taking my own experiences and putting that on someone else, because we have very different experiences. And then the second piece was really just I took for granted that my kids, he was talking about how we react to things. You shared this, Ariel. Sometimes I can react to behaviors because of how they make me feel.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of what they're doing.
Right.
And I remember having this conversation with Dr. Mark. This was several months ago in a private conversation. It was a counseling session, actually. And I was confused with why I was getting so upset with my son. I love my son. I only have one son. He's super energetic, tons of passion, but can be a little, to me, sometimes be, he's not thinking really through things. He's just kind of reacting to things.
So he's 9.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
And so I was just like, you know, when I was telling him to, you know, to go to bed and he wasn't listening very quickly, I assigned that as disrespect.
Yep.
Right. But, and again, long story short, I was reacting to something that I was assuming something about his motives that was not true about him. So I was responding to how his behavior made me feel, not to the actual thing that he was doing, which again, for most of you guys, probably like, oh, like that's totally, oh yeah, I've known that forever. Like I did not know that until very, very recently. And so that was helpful for me, not just related to parenting, but also related to leadership. Being able to give specific language to, usually when we talk about our feelings, we think in very generic terms, mad, sad, glad, happy, but there's a lot of other things underneath that.
Yep.
And so those are the things that stand for me as highlights from my time with Dr. Mark, specific to my responsibility as a pastor and shepherd, and then also to my responsibility as a father and
right.
as a husband.
Well, I think, so one of the things that Dr. Mark talks about is that, you know, language creates culture.
Mm-hmm.
And culture, it affects us relationally, it affects us emotionally, it affects us spiritually, and in all of these different ways. And so understanding, or taking the time, I would say, to understand the specificity of language
mm-hmm.
and those dissections. Because you're right, like, And also, like, being aware, I think one of the things that's really difficult to do, and you have to be extremely intentional about it, you have actually taught me a lot about this, is, like, being aware of your blind spots, which
mm-hmm.
means learning to ask, hey, where am I missing this?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the disconnect?
Yeah.
Like, you talked about the difference between You know, spiritual maturity and emotional maturity. Those are not synonymous.
Yeah.
Like, even throughout the Bible, that's one of the reasons why the Bible is such a beautiful book, is because, you know, you have David, King David. Yeah. He's there. Yeah. You know, he's, you know, an example of a little bit of neuroticism.
Yeah.
In also this, you know, just read the Psalms. You know, this beautiful language around his robust relationship with God.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you cut to the New Testament, and I don't know, like, I usually, this is really funny. So for those of you that don't know, so in the dichotomy of me and Dave's relationship, he's John. He's a disciple, John. He's leaned up on the breast of Jesus, just listening to his heartbeat. He can ask all the questions. I'm Peter. Okay, so I am real high high, real lows lows. Like, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then 5 seconds later, it's get behind me, Satan. And so I think if there's an example of an emotionally immature disciple, right, we can point to Peter, because he wasn't trying to cut that dude's ear off.
Yeah.
Just FYI. He was aiming for his head, and he missed and caught the ear. You know what I mean? So he's a little bit emotionally unhinged, which gives me a lot of comfort, because we all have our moments. But understanding the difference between, like, hey, emotional maturity, and then creating language and understanding. One of the things that I just kind of do by default, because I'm the only male in my house, which means I'm really used to being wrong and corrected. It's just a thing. It's the way I grew up in a women's shelter, and then I live with my mom, my sisters, and I live with my wife and my two daughters. And so I'm just like, correct me, please. Like, tell me how. But one of the things that I'll say often is, hey, help me understand what you mean. Help me understand what you mean, because I'm interpreting this way. Mm-hmm. Is that what you mean? And then the second thing to that, a conversation I had very recently, is I think especially as parents, we can take things personal that are absolutely not meant to be taken personal. Mm-hmm. Like our kid, like, you know, Cohen's 9.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a time, right? There's a time, and there is a tensionality where that's not the excuse anymore. Right, there's a difference between ignorance and disobedience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, but understanding, there's a lot more ignorance than there is disobedience with our kids. They're just living their lives. They're doing their things. They're in their own worlds. They have 9-year-old brains and minds and hearts and lives.
Yeah.
And we, I think for me at least, I have to get really, like, out of my own flesh and be like, hey, this isn't directed towards me. This isn't personal.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and then that really helps me be able to take a breath and say, hey, help me understand what you mean, or how does this make sense?
Yeah.
And so that kind of, like, scope being filled, back to language creating culture.
Before you get there,
yes, ma'am.
Can I just
you
say,
may do whatever you like.
I can do whatever.
The world is yours.
I'd like to just come up with a rap parody on
there
the top.
You go.
Just kidding.
Let's go.
Dave, bust a beat.
I would have been so impressed if you just did that. So
he can beatbox. He's been in enough youth camps. I know that guy.
Okay, no, but I was just gonna say that you talked about this getting out of your flesh, and as you were talking, I was just thinking, truthfully, also we need to be aware that, like, spiritual warfare is all wrapped up.
Yeah,
in this,
so
right?
Good. Ephesians 6.
And so exactly, and so we just have to be really mindful that the enemy, he is a manipulator,
mm-hmm.
and what does he like to manipulate? Feelings,
mm-hmm.
right? The way that you interpret it. Sometimes when people have certain feelings, it's about certain situations, it's because the enemy knows exactly how to use those
yeah.
against them. So I that's just something that I have to be aware of, is that sometimes when I'm having the best day and the Lord's been teaching me all this stuff, that's the moment that my child has a behavior and it impacts me in a particular way.
Yeah.
And so I just think that it's not just like getting out of your flesh, but it's being able to recognize that spiritual warfare and in our marriages and
mm-hmm.
in our parenting. Remember that the person in front of us that is sparking up these feelings,
yeah.
that they're not the enemy, but there is a real enemy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Well, and I know this is one of those things that's way easier to say than it is to do, but it doesn't make it less true. We're not called to be a people primarily of feeling. We are called to be a people of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And faith, feeling is subjugated. It is under the authority. I'm sorry. Feeling is under the authority of faith. Right. And that becomes, and I think culture that's relevant to say, because we will say things all the time, like it's inundated in our culture. Like, I don't feel like the Lord.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, like, go is the command.
Yeah.
There's that. I don't, it doesn't matter what your feeling is behind that. Like the Great Commission is the Great Commission, and Jesus's explicit words are Jesus's explicit words, and his explicit actions are his explicit actions. I love that God gives us emotions, yeah. but they're not in the driver's seat here. And at some point, I think we have to understand, first of all, that has to become very real in my life. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, that's a personal decision that I am making, similar to like my relationship to be a follower of Jesus. And our children have to make that decision on their own as well. Like, not that they're not guided in it, but it's got to be their decision too, that they're people of faith over feeling, especially in a culture that is reliant of feeling as the primary temperature. It's like, hey, I know you might not understand this part yet, but let's start unpacking and uncovering what this means, and here's what it's looking like in my life. Yeah. And I think that's a beautiful thing, because there is this, I think it's a hard thing for a lot of people to deal with, in that, yes, we're parents, okay? So we have this gift, right, of getting to represent God as father and as parent, right, to our children. But then there, the cross is the great equalizer, and we see, oh, while we're given the responsibility of parents, we're all God's children.
Yeah.
And so we're not our children's peers. That's not what I'm trying to say. But spiritually speaking, there is this, hey, you can see me struggle through this too, and I can be transparent with you, and I need your help.
Yeah.
Like, that's language I use a lot, is like, in a situation where I don't know the answer, I'll just sit down and I'll apologize for the things where I lose my temper, because that's a thing. You guys know me. Love you too. But like, I lose my mind sometimes, you know, or I'll say something that I shouldn't say, and I'll always make sure to circle back and be like, hey, I should have handled this way. Here's the deal. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I've never done this with you.
Yeah.
And so what are some ideas? This is the end goal. What are some ideas from your perspective? And then will you help me? Yeah. Will you help me get us to that place? And that usually creates that level of, I don't know, just kind of simpatico. You know, we're kind of on the same page.
Yeah, one of the things that, like, just sharing the idea of, like, submitting our feelings to God's word, I mean, that's a powerful thought, but it's also a struggle for people to do that.
For sure.
And I think one of the things that has been really helpful for me is, I don't know, it's just a different word, but it's the same idea, but it's surrender. It's not submission, it's surrender. Like, God, I have these feelings, how interpreting things, I want to surrender them to you, and I want to just put them into your hands. And anything that is not from you, would you let me see it that way? Mm-hmm. And anything that you're calling me to be responsible for, let me be responsible for it. And anything that I need to let go of, help me to let go of it. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's the difference between obedience and surrender. I was raised in a Baptist theology and faith, which was very like white knuckled, just grit and make it happen, obedience. It's actually a huge part of who I am, but I feel like there's a higher call, and the higher call is to surrender. Yeah. And just, it's this idea of almost like a trapeze artist, and there's a guy on the ground that can see why you're disoriented. Like, you're in the air, you're flying, you can't trust your senses. You have to listen to them say, let go, or help, or whatever they say, right? And so that's the picture that I think about when it comes to emotions and feelings, of surrendering them to the Lord, inviting him in, because I had been trained to push him down. Mm-hmm. I had never been trained into, how do I invite the Lord into these moments of extraordinary feelings that I don't know how to process. And that has been very fruitful for me, because that is where he's trying to father me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I just didn't have a grid for, how do I invite him into those moments? How do I give specificity to what I'm feeling so that he can father me through them? The second thing that you shared, and I like totally align with you, and that has been a new season for me. Like, with my 13-year-old, it feels like I'm coming beside her.
Yep.
And I do coach her, but it's more of like, sweetie, I've felt these things too. I've experienced this. Like, I have failed. In the exact same way that you have. So I don't want you to hear me saying I'm ashamed of you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying I know what it's like to be in that place, and I want to help you.
Yeah.
Help me understand how you're feeling about this, so I know better how to come around beside you and to be a coach and a cheerleader, not a strong arm trying to push you down or to point a finger at you. So that has definitely been a distinct difference as with my older child than it is my younger child. I'm still, there's moments like that where I'll just say, Cohen, I'm sorry for losing my temper. You know, I'm sorry for what I said. I wasn't upset with you. I was upset with this. But I feel like a lot more of my time with him right now was like really like discipling him, teaching him the words of God over his life, more than the words of the world over his life.
For sure.
So those, that would be my initial thoughts. What you
said. So I have two questions, but I'll ask them different than the way they kind of popped into my head here. So one of the, how can I say this? I think one of the most, emotionally inducing things that I repeat to people is the reality of what Jesus provides to us, mm-hmm. In the perspective of God the Father through the declaration of Matthew chapter 3, right? That, at the baptism of Jesus, this is my kid, this is my child. Yeah. I think it takes a step of a deeper depth of faith each declaration that we go. Because it's, this is my child, and then it jumps to whom I love, mm-hmm. and then I think the biggest leap of faith for people really in their heart is with whom I'm well pleased. And I know a lot of people that will say I'm a child of God that will practically live their lives like he's really upset, mm-hmm. and disappointed, mm-hmm. primarily.
Yeah.
That being said, I think one of the most powerful things, and I think there's a purposefulness to this, but as a parent, how often do you verbalize to your children how... pride is the wrong word, mm-hmm. but how pleasing they are to you. And I know it's different. Like, you guys are wildly different spaces of life, but I still think it's important.
Yeah.
All right. Because I've always said that you ultimately reflect the God that you actually believe in. Mm-hmm. And I know, it's kind of like, there's this old saying of like, the husband and wife who come in for marriage counseling, and she's, I don't feel like you love me. And he's like, well, I told you when we got married, I'll tell you if I change my mind. It's like, probably not a good idea. Yeah. You might want to verbalize. Yeah. But I also know that people have a really hard time verbalizing affirmation. Mm-hmm. And I've never understood why, personally. Mm-hmm. I'm a very, like, your teenagers may tell you differently, but don't let them lie. I encourage them all the time. But, like, I tend to try to be quick, unless it's to Jared. No, I tell Jared how proud I am of him every day. But like, it's like, how often does that happen for you guys? Like, are you aware?
Yeah. So my husband's love language is words of affirmation.
Okay, let's go.
Notice I said my husband.
Me and William up in there. We tend, also what's important, I know everyone in this room is an expert on this, but you tend to give love like you want to receive love and you kind of miss. So I'm listening.
Yep. So, yeah, that is definitely his, and I come from a family that's pretty critical, right? Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because outside of my family, especially my students, they'd be like, yeah, profe. When I was a Spanish teacher, my high schoolers, they probably say she's extremely encouraging, even while she's trying to get me to do hard things. But I think when it comes to my family, mm-hmm. the critique happens way more than affirmation. And I am very sensitive to that. And I've become very aware of it. And it took me doing like a 30-day encourage your husband challenge.
Okay.
To like start to acknowledge like, oh snap, I'm really not encouraging you. And I just remember 1 week into the challenge, he was like, I asked him, I was like, you've just been so happy lately. And he's like, yeah, you've been so encouraging. And I didn't tell him I was like, doing this the challenge, is so weird.
Cause and effect. Wow, who knew?
Not until the end, And that's so funny. I was like, that's crazy, And so now if there is a critique or something that's out of my mouth, like I'm so aware of it almost instantly. I watch, I realize what happens, but it's because I'm seeing what's happening with him and I'm like taking that as input. It doesn't mean I don't say anything that's not positive, but I take it as input. And it's the same. I'm realizing my child has very similar love languages. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he has them all, but he definitely has affirmation. That's he just really like loves that. But I'm trying to be sensitive to not always say I'm pleased with you because of what you do. Because what I'd want to highlight is that Jesus, or God said that about Jesus before at the start of his ministry, Like, he hadn't had those 3 years of crazy ministry, but even, like, I'm in the women's Bible study on Wednesdays and have been thinking a lot about Queen Esther, and, she just showed up, and, like, after a year of these beautifications and all of that, like, he was pleased with her before, like, she carried out her duties as a queen. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some validity to like praising people specifically for who they are, whether they're showing that in the moment or not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm just constantly with my kids trying to remember like, who has God told me that yes. you are? Like, they both had prophetic words during their baby dedications and things like that. Yeah. And I just recently tried to study those and listen, pray about them and write them down.
Yeah.
And all this yeah. stuff. Cause I'm like, I need to remember who they are because they're showing up in their flesh. They're yeah, showing, they flesh. Haven't gotten to who yeah. they are, yeah. but as long as God can remind me, and when I see them, see who God's called them to be, the way that God sees
so
me
good.
As who he's called me to be, then I'll be able to respond accordingly.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
I love that.
One of the things you said, and I think this, because I so relate to what you just shared,
yeah.
is that you can have critical thinking without carrying a critical heart.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes sure. I would use my gift of discernment as
yeah.
a way to justify really cynical thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, man, like mm-hmm. I don't want my kids to experience me as a cynic and a critic. I want them to experience me as a father that like lovingly cares for them. There's a ballast, I think, in the ship. And I even heard you sharing this area where it's like, hey, I'm not just trying to flatter people.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. So if you just want me to sit around here and tell you everything you're doing good, even when it's not, I'm not your guy.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I do want to be able to speak into someone before it's happened,
mm-hmm.
right? That's our faith. That's our we're seeing mm-hmm. them beyond like what's mm-hmm. the obvious and mm-hmm. In the now. And so yeah, I just think there is a yeah. I so resonated with what Ariel shared. I'm like mm-hmm. I absolutely feel that way. And that was something that my wife is. She's an eternal optimist. She sees the best and opportunities everywhere. And I am so not that, but I know that my kids need to experience that from me as a father and as a dad, of speaking into them, encouraging them, without, again, not being naive or being flattering, but seeing through the moment and knowing that there's a God that sees beyond all this.
Yep.
And there are moments, like you said, with prophetic words and visions that God gives us for our kids. And I have those. For my kids, so I know who they'll be.
Yep.
The process can be painful.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And the process can be testing, and you know it can be difficult to remember those things. But man, if I could remember what Ariel said every day of, I want to. And Natalie did this. My wife, she did this thing. She called it a criticism fast for a week, and man, it changed my life.
And the she's eternal not even, optimist.
She's not
stop
even
criticizing
a critical
you.
Person. She's not even a critical person, but just she was like really looking for opportunities to speak into me as a husband and as a father, and it totally shifted my perspective.
Yeah.
So I just say that to say that it's a real battle, but it's a battle worth fighting.
Yeah, I think you know just a reminder that the more I do life, the more like. You really bump headlong into the words of scripture being so true, and that the power of life and death in the tongue is just so, like, I think a lot of people think of that with a negative, organically negative charge. It's like the power of death is in the tongue. Yeah, but the power of life is in the tongue too. And you don't discount the one for the other, you know, and understanding I can speak the... That's a common conversation I have with people who have teenagers in crisis.
Yeah.
You know, one of the first places that we go is conversational inventory. Mm-hmm. You know, like, have most of the conversations been critical?
Yeah.
They've been usually about a problem, like, because we're naturally negatively charged, but we're called to be reborn into these creatures of light, not of darkness, right? So we trade natures. One's organic, though. We're born with a darkened nature, so we can find ourselves kind of abandoning this, you know, this skin of light and saying, well, I got to just take this part off because I know, I just know what it feels like. I know what it's like to control, even to the point that, you know, we'll lean into toxic traits because they're predictable.
Hmm.
Because a common thing for people who have toxic traits is like they'll exercise those unknowingly, subconsciously, just because it creates predictability.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to ask one last question because we're going to run out of time and I want to be, I just want to honor everyone's time really well. But what would, like, where do you go or what would you advise to the parent who feels like if you're in the season where you feel like you're just failing, like you're leaning into your emotions, you're more easily, you know, you're quick to anger, the concept of I'm his child, I'm loved, and I'm pleased by God is just seemingly foreign. Like, where have you ever found yourself in that season? And where did you go? Like, what was practical about that? Or what would you say to a person who may feel like they're in that season and they just feel like they're falling on their face as mom and dad, and they're just overwhelmed with it?
Yeah. You want to go first? You want me to?
You go first.
So I love that you talked about the power of life and death is in the tongue. And there was something that you said that I thought of it, but then since you said that, I was like, perfect segue. As we've been talking, I've just been picturing like this triad, you know. We know that the Trinity is three, and so, like, anytime I see, like, triangles and things, there's normally, like, a revelation there that the Lord's trying to give me. And I was seeing this triad that was between the mind, the heart, and the mouth.
Mm.
And what's cool about that triad is it doesn't touch the hands, right? Like, just by being a human being and alive, you have those three things. And it touches the hands if you're deaf and you use sign language. but all that being said, what's really cool is, like, I would say to that parent, if you're struggling, the Bible calls us to take every thought captive for us to have a heart of flesh. And in those two things, the product, the fruit, is life out of our mouths. So if you notice that the things out of your mouths are not coming out the way that they need to, check your thoughts and check your heart. And a modern day miracle, had this crazy situation with one of the boards that I'm on. Board member calls me. She's a believer. She's like, we need to pray. So we pray. And I said, Lord, I had just seen a scripture. I was like, don't let any unwholesome talk in my mouth about this situation.
Yeah.
Y'all, four or five times already this has happened where I started to say something about it and I said something about it and my phone messed up. And I'm literally, every time I was like, pivot, I hear it, Lord, and then my phone starts working. It's happened like four or five times. And now it's no longer a coincidence. Like, literally, the talk's coming out of my mouth, but the person on the other end is not able to hear it.
Yeah.
And so, like, I realize my heart is, like, it's malleable. And my thoughts, I'm realizing I'm able to surrender in that moment in my mind. And even when it comes out of my mouth, he's not going to allow it to impact that person. And when we're in person, I just can't get myself to say it. You know,
it's,
God is so good in that way that he's working out that triad.
Yeah, that 2 Corinthians verse is, it's a really militant verse. And one of the things that, just as you were talking about that, I was in a teaching setting this past weekend, and I made the statement that obedience is a matter of warfare, not conformity. Because it's empowering shalom within you, and then that shalom, that harmony, right, it comes out of you. It begins to influence outside of you. That's a very militant perspective on correcting both the interior and the exterior that's disobedient to God. And those taking those thoughts captive. Because even then, like, I love that verse, like that, Romans 12, 2, like they all speak to, like, this knowledge, right? Yeah. This knowledge and repentance, like, change, you know, the way that you think. Don't be conformed to the image of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. But I've also found that people, I've had times in life where people took verses like that and turned them back into legalism, where they were just counting all the thoughts that weren't, you know, what they considered or what they felt is the key word, submitted into obedience unto Christ. And they just made it a law back unto themselves. And so, just really having that perspective of, like, hey, this isn't a checkbox.
Yeah.
Right, this is an intimate place, and really, that's really the back end of, like, when you see, like, knowledge, thinking, like, when you dig all the way down, it's that same language of like a man would lay with a woman, he would know her. There's the gnosis, it's the intimate place, and so there's something that God is wanting to do, and an intimate encounter that then transitions how we see Him in ourselves as we go through that experience. So, Dave, you were gonna jump in.
No, I think that the only thing I would say, because your question was about what would I say to someone that's feeling deeply discouraged or disoriented, or they're just, I'm failing, and who hasn't, who doesn't, right? Yeah. That will happen. And so I would say the specific thing that has been helpful for me is to remember, this actually was, again, Dr. Mark, shout out to you, brother. I was having a conversation with him about insecurity, and God calls us to be humble. He never calls us to be insecure.
Yep.
And I was asking him about, you know, like, what do you do when you feel like you're failing or you feel really insecure about something? And he said, the only way you can deal with insecurity is by dragging it into the light.
Yep.
Dragging it into the light. And so I would say at times, because we're so in our heads, you need to have a trusted advisor, mm-hmm. someone that you can talk to. Because sometimes actually hearing you say the mm-hmm. thing out loud
for sure
is very helpful. Yeah. Because I've actually been in meetings with someone and they say it and they're like, wow, I can't believe I said mm-hmm. that. I can't believe I believe that. Now that I've said that, I know that that's not true. But now what am I going to do with it?
Yeah. So
it's that kind of so it's community. I would say it's really having people around you that know you well enough to know, like, is this just like a soft spot or a blind spot? Or is this something that I'm really concerned about? Like, this is not them. Like, this mm-hmm. is not normal or typical. But this is where, like, church, community, having life together, life groups are so important. But they scare the crap out of people right yep. now. Intimacy really scares people. Yep. And so that's my biggest, the reason that we had Dr. Mark come in is because I was having so many conversations with parents that were saying, I want to help my child. I don't know how. They're dealing with stuff. I don't have yep. tools. And so I would just say, if you're in a place where you feel helpless, that it's very important for you to reach out so that you don't stay hopeless. Mm-hmm. I would say that would be a really critical step to take, is to not just stay there, but to really seek out help.
Mm-hmm.
Find the things that you're feeling insecure, name them specifically, and then usually in naming them, it detaches all the lies that are connected to it. So that's as practical as I could be with
yeah.
a really broad question like that.
When I know that, I'll say it this way. I know that it's a luxury in life, and it's a purposeful act to have the type of depth of community that you can bring significant struggles and yeah. or areas that you don't know what to do with. I think it's a luxury. I think that God has it for each person in each season, but it takes a lot of purposefulness
yeah.
and a lot of work. And I just say that to say that if you feel like you're not in the space. So Dave, one of the things that you said that was really powerful. So, the University of Stanford did a psychological sociological research thing. They found 82% of therapy patients mm-hmm. Actually processed their own, they verbally processed it, which was yeah. a lot of Freud's like whole thing, right? Yeah. It was just listening. But there's a high propensity that when you talk through and you literally hear yourself out loud, you hear how insane or how off that's not you,
right?
You dissect this spirit away from you, and if you don't have that in a person,
mm-hmm.
you absolutely have that in prayer.
Yeah,
you absolutely have that in, and I think that's why the exercise of vocal cords in prayer.
Yeah,
is yeah. So, I mean, it's literally like yeah. there's a lot of like, I could give you probably more than you want on medical data on why using your vocal cords in something like prayer is far more effective than the thoughts of prayers.
Yeah.
But not to, I'm not trying to make that point. I'm just trying to say that if you're maybe in that space where you don't have that people, we hope to be that people. I know the people, you know, the body of restoration hopes to be that people. Mm-hmm. If you're in that space where you are, you're just in that place of like, I don't have that person. I don't have those people. The Lord is there.
Yeah.
The Lord is there and he's with you. And when you say whatever it is out loud, you bring your cares, you bring your struggles, you bring your burdens to the Lord, you exchange yokes,
you know,
and you really have the opportunity. It goes back to that surrender space of like he's trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
You can surrender that to God and you can stop beating yourself up for it, because this isn't, you know, there's no one way to do this.
Yeah. And God gave us a new Trinity that God gave us, like the Holy Spirit, God the Father, and us, right? Like we get to do that through the Holy mm-hmm. Spirit. So if you're lacking community, like it's built in into following mm-hmm. Jesus.
Yeah, we need other people to see God clearly, and we have the great gift of being able to have the bridge, the gap completely bridged by the cross and what Jesus did.
And I'd like to give a practical like tip toward if you're really looking to create and cultivate close community. Is I would encourage you to start with something like this. Share something that is important to you and then just listen to how they respond. And some people are going to say, I call these the advice monsters. they're going to say, oh, you should read this book. You should listen to this podcast. You should go to this conference. It's not a bad thing. It's just they're always going to have this thing that you should do.
I'm the advice monster that lurks in Dave's closet.
and then you'll share something and someone will say, oh, wow, okay. And then they'll like move on to the next topic. And, you know, they're too busy to be connected to what you're sharing. But there'll be a few that you share something really important and they lean in and they say, I'm really sorry. Like, how are you feeling? Mm-hmm. How are you doing? How can I help?
Yeah.
And that's a person that you can start building community with.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes we're looking for love in all the wrong places, as they say. So.
Well, just to not that I'm biased or anything, but one just real practical tip on building community is like prioritize attending church and find a community to fall into within that church. It's a great idea. Love you guys. Dave, Ariel, thank you guys so much for your time and your wisdom. Parents, Church of the Harvest, love you guys. I'll see you soon. Bye.